Okay, hello.
Hello.
Okay, yeah, we're on. Oh, I'm on. I don't know if you are. Oh, man. You there?
Yeah.
Okay, where are you going? I hear your mic making all kinds of noises.
Okay, then it's on.
All right, well, welcome to North Shore Sports. I have no idea what we're doing. Wow.
Why should this not be any different than any other?
There we go.
An extra 4 feet of
there
cord.
There we go. Excellent. All right. Oh, my word. This is such a we are polished, aren't we?
Hey, it's not easy being us. Not easy being anybody else, either.
So polished, if I could walk that way, I wouldn't need to. Oh, never mind. All right, this is North Shore Sports Night. As you can tell, I'm Rick Moore. Tim Kearns is here. Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer. The voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell, is off tonight. But I'm sure he's monitoring this. If not now, then later. All right. And, we're rolling along.
If he's doing it live, he's shaking his head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like... Thank goodness, my other and you know what, Tim? Just mark that up if you want to. Don't even worry. No, go ahead, mark it up. It's yours.
Okay. No, I was just trying to see how many games I was going to be doing this.
All right. Well, you're doing them all. You're doing every week.
That would appear to be the case.
Of course, we're looking at the football schedule for high school sports, but it's going to change because right now we have primarily Northeastern Conference schools on there with one or two Cape Ann League schools, I believe, sprinkled in. But come this fall, which is fall sports begins at about 4 weeks. September 7, September 8, right around there. We are going to sprinkle in some Cape Ann League games because I don't know if you knew it or not, but WNBP has been sold. And so the Newburyport local station, I'm not sure they will be doing local sports. And we have a very good following and interest in Newburyport, Pawtucket, Ipswich, Triton, North Reading. The Cape Ann League school is up there, so I'm thinking we can probably fit in a couple of Newburyport or Ipswich or any of those schools' games that might be of import. So we're going to check that out, Tim. It's going to be a little ride, as my old radio boss used to say, up county. But, it's always been my contention that there should be a super league of Cape Ann League teams and Northeastern Conference teams, and I think it would make a whole lot more sense. And by the way, I do have calls out to the athletic directors at Somerville High School, Medford High School, and Malden High School. Those are the new Greater Boston League entries into the Northeastern Conference League for football, Northeastern Conference for football. Everett is joining the league overall, but not for football. So we will be making contact with those athletic directors at some point. They're not available tonight, but we will get them on. And it seems to me, Tim, that it makes more sense. I don't know. I just have this fantasy of a super league with the Cape Ann League, and maybe a GBL team here and there. But Masconomet, Newburyport, Ipswich, Hamilton, Wenham, those schools to me, they're neighboring towns to Cape Ann League schools. And Gloucester and Newburyport had a history rival back in the day, and also with Ipswich. But Newburyport was a huge rival, huge rivalry between Gloucester and Newburyport. I'd love to see it.
Well, the only thing you'd have to do, if you're going to make a super league like that, you'd have to have a north, a central, and a southern
division. Oh, I don't care.
Division.
So what?
And just in terms of geographic consistency, and, they talk about eliminating cost in the high school sports. And yet the MIAA and the Northeast Conference, they go and they take in these teams from the old GBL. So you've got, you've got Gloucester traveling to Somerville, to Medford, to Malden. And you have the sub-varsity sports traveling there as well. And that's an increased cost in gas, wages to the drivers, and I don't want to shot the drivers any money, certainly. But, I mean, you talk about trying to save funds, and yet the athletics got more expensive by this expansion into a wider geographic area. That, to me, made no sense. And a lot of people think the same thing. If you had taken Winthrop, Revere, even Saugus, and move those over into that Somerville, Malden, Medford. Give them a league. You know, and so that shortens the number of miles that buses have to travel, time to get to the games, you know, delayed starts. It's a horror show for all season sports, not just the football season. But it would be nice, you know, if you could have a division, but it would in some ways it'd be very, very tough. You know, are you going to put Newbury, Pentucket, Triton, Ipswich, Hamilton, Wenham, Gloucester, all in one Northern League, and then have a central area of Beverly, Marblehead, Swampscott, Peabody, Danvers. Well, that's a killer division right there. There are no easy games.
I think it'd be great.
Easy games at all within that. It would literally be the black and blue division.
Yeah.
You know, and then you would have a Southern division of God, I just I can't wrap my head around having to say Somerville, Malden, Medford, Winthrop, Revere, Saugus, your two Lynn teams, and maybe Swampscott in that group. Yeah, it Super League, yeah, three conference winners, yeah, you know, each playing in a different division because you'd have to rate those schools. Yeah, you know, it'd be nice to see. It would be fun to see, but would it in the end, you know, be workable? Where are you going to play? Okay, you play everybody within your division once in football, and then you're going to play two teams from the central, two teams from the south, and you rotate those.
If you can fit those three schools, Medford, well, four schools, Everett. Let's not forget about Everett because they're in all the other sports. Everett, Medford, Malden, and Somerville, if you can fit that into a Northeastern Conference schedule, then I know for sure you could switch it around and bring it back over to the east part, the eastern part of the county. And just to me, again, you know, Newburyport, the schools that stand out are, you know, Newbury, for me, Newburyport, Ipswich, Hamilton, Wenham, and Masconomet.
But also, years ago, wasn't Newburyport in the old Essex County League?
They were in the, I think it was the North Shore League. I think it was called, maybe it might have been called that, but I think in football.
I don't recall it ever being called the North Shore League.
Yeah, it was in hockey, I believe. It was called, in hockey, it was the North Shore League. Because I remember seeing that sign up at the old Lynn Arena. I don't know. And it just, and I'm being selfish here because we, and I'm not taking any, I don't know anything about the other schools. We're going to find out about Somerville, Medford, and Malden. And I know that they have great traditions. We used to do Beverly, Malden, Beverly, Medford in football. We did those quite a bit. We used to do Beverly Everett in football when I was at WESX with Bill. So I'm not taking anything away from them, and I don't mean, if it sounds, you know, like I am, I don't mean to do that. It's just that what you just said.
Air.
Okay. Let's see if we can turn this on. There you go. Hear it? There we go. So it just seems to me that you know, there would be a way to get the school. And I'll tell you what, North Reading, you know, has been great. We've covered the North. We're going to do a lot of those games, and we're going to do. But it's just covering conference games. I'm not sure how that's going to affect our schedule. In fact, we can take a look at it. Just looking at Gloucester games for the moment, these are the games that we have tentatively scheduled. Gloucester at Revere, and I'm not even sure about that one because we have some issues. But Gloucester at Revere, and not with Revere High School, not with the kids, absolutely, or Gloucester. Coach Ciccatelli, he's tremendous, and I think Revere has just been so competitive, and they are good to have into the conference, in my opinion. But anyway, we got Gloucester at Revere on September 8th, and then we have the next week we have Beverly at Gloucester, and let's see what other games we have on 9/29, Lynn Classical at Gloucester. So those three games are traditional rivalries, especially Beverly, but also Classical. Now, after that, we have Gloucester at Marblehead. So there's a fourth rivalry. And then we have Medford at Gloucester. That's the first non-rivalry that we have. Now, those are five. I thought we had six games. And then we have the sixth game will be, of course, the Danvers-Gloucester Thanksgiving Day game, and you got the playoffs sprinkled in. So we're going to cover the traditional schools plus Medford. Outside of that, I'm just looking. I don't see on our schedule at the moment, I don't see the other schools here. Now, some of our games the first weekend, we got Medford. Oh, there it is, Medford at Lynn Classical. You and Bill on Friday night. And then Saturday, we've got Beverly at Lynn English, Bishop Fenwick at Hamilton Wenham. So we're going outside the conference of that one. And then
how are we going to do that game?
I'm not sure.
Is it, it's at Hamilton Wenham?
Yeah.
They have a press box?
Yeah. Oh. So we have to decide on that one. We're not sure. It depends on staffing, because I won't be available that weekend. Yes, I will. It's the next weekend I won't be available. Beverly-Gloucester game, I won't be available for that one. Marty should be doing that game. So anyway, and then on 9:15, it's Beverly at Gloucester, Danvers at Peabody. And then on 9:22, it is Marblehead at Peabody, Revere at Lynn Classical, North Reading at Lynn English on Friday night. Now, those are three games, and I'm not sure we're going to do all three. We have the capability to do all three. And then on Saturday, it will be Malden at Beverly. So that's our early schedule. We haven't posted a schedule up on the, yet on the website, but we will be doing that. So that's all upcoming. Now, tonight, the reason you and I are babbling on here is, we did not make contact with the athletic directors, but we will have Gary Larrabee on later on, and we'll also have Nick Kukuru on. Gary, of course, sports historian and golf writer, and we'll have Nick Kukuru. Nick's at the Intertown League playoffs tonight, and he'll be checking in with us in a little while, and also telling us about the Dory races that took place on Saturday and today. And I have up on the screen there, Coach, have you seen that commercial?
I have not seen the commercial. I just heard the announcement as I was coming down the road that Vince had announced Vince Wilfork, nose tackle of the Patriots and of late the Texans, has announced his retirement. I guess it was quite the entertaining announcement. I haven't seen it.
Tremendous. It is tremendous. And the guy is charismatic, Tim. He's got a future.
Oh, yeah.
On TV. He's tremendous. He does. You got to look at it. Anybody can just Google Vince Wilfork retirement, and the video will pop up. And it is so entertaining, so well done. And you don't have the sound up on that, so you really can't get the effect. But it's really cool. It's tremendous, and I'm happy to see that he's retiring with all of his faculties intact.
Yeah, that's been quite the controversy of late with the Tom Brady comment by Giselle that he did have a. Did have a concussion last season, and Tom said, you know, my private medical concerns are none of your business. And then
we're watching Wilfork dance with his coveralls on.
He's twerking for the camera
with Kingsford charcoal at the barbecue, and there's going to be a big barbecue, I guess, in New England on September 7th with Vince there. And when he talks in this video, it's so funny.
That the end of commercial.
And look at that! Look at that! Jumping up like that.
so he's basically walking away.
New England, September 7, 2017. And he does. You know how guys can jump up and click their heels like Jimmy Cagney and stuff? Wilfork can do that.
I would fall over. I would
yeah.
Definitely.
Fall oh, so would I.
Fall
and,
over.
And the man is such an athlete, but very beloved. I you know what, Coach? I'm hoping he. Catches on with the Patriots somehow, you know, in some kind of capacity.
Well, you know, there's Patriots don't have a problem with bringing back people. You know, it was great to see Mike Vrabel hanging around even though he's the linebacker coach or the defensive coordinator for the Texans. He spent a couple of days in Foxborough with the Patriots talking to some of their guys. So, you know, Bill loves having those guys around because they convey what it means to have been a Patriot, to have, you know, basically done it the Patriot way, as people like to say and criticize. But, you know, it's a formula. Whether it's a real formula or an imaginary formula, it's something that has worked.
Talk about that for a minute. I hear people criticize that on Boston radio, and they...
Yeah, we know who we're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, but they infer that it's this, what's the word I'm looking for? Haughty culture. And so when they bring in, when the Patriots bring in a player who was of questionable character, then these people, these talk show hosts, are all over it. But the Patriots have never put out anything with respect to the haughtiness or anything with respect to the fact that the Patriot way is a character thing. The Patriot way is it means you play unselfish. And you play to the best of your ability, and you do what you're supposed to do. Now, do they get questionable characters from time to time? Yeah. Do these guys clean up their act when they're with the Patriots? Sometimes, and sometimes they don't. But what happens when they don't, Tim? You tell me. When they don't fit the this this ethic that the Patriots have when you get here. They don't follow. What happens to them?
Albert Haynesworth found out.
They're gone.
Early, before midseason.
They're gone.
There's the door. See ya.
Right.
We don't need you. We don't need your attitude.
So it's not hypocritical when you bring someone in. That's not hypocritical.
No, it's what the Patriot way is. It is a level of expectation.
And excellence.
You
it's
know,
a level of excellence.
That you perform to the best of your ability on every single play, whether it's a game or a practice. And especially in practice, because it translates to the game. If you can't learn the system, if you can't be part of the system, then you can't be part of the Patriots. And that's the Patriots way. And is it a mystique? Other teams like to think so. You know, that it's the way that Bill does business. It's what Bob Kraft has bought into over the years, and the lessons that he learned, kind of stepping on Bill Belichick's toes when Bill Parcells was here, and he sort of stepped on his toes about running the team. Bob, you own the team. Let me run the team. And that's what he has allowed, and that's the one thing that Kraft really benefited by was the lesson that he learned. Bring Bill in. I own the team. You run the team. Because you know what's best from the football end. I know what's best from the business end. And has Bill taken flyers on some bad Haynesworth? Yeah, but he wasn't here long. You know, Randy Moss, a lot of people, bad attitude on Randy Moss, talented, one of those talented receivers of all time. But there were people who talked down about Randy Moss and his attitude and da-da-da-da, and he'd be poisoned. Well, he came in and put up a record-setting season in 2007 with Tom Brady. 23 touchdown passes. Brady threw for 50 touchdown passes. You know, And they lost that goofy game.
But he was here for 2.5 years.
And
the only reason they let him go was he was tailing off. It was time to retire.
Yeah,
he behaved himself.
And there was some talk that he was getting a little antsy because his receptions were down. Okay, fine. Hey,
it's time.
But that's life in the NFL.
The other thing Moss did that I think he was properly criticized for, on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's at the end of his career, he would take plays off. And that just doesn't happen in the Patriot system. You're not allowed to take plays off. One of the things that I know Coach Ingram talks about it, and the high school coaches talk about, is your receivers, they got to be able to block.
Yep.
And in the Patriots scheme of things, you see receivers block. I mean, and I don't think you see that across the board in professional football.
No. But
you see little guys like Wes Welker, Troy Brown, and now Julian. They block.
Yeah. Well, the thing,
they don't take plays off.
That label had been put on Randy Moss earlier in his
But I watched
career.
Him. He did
that,
take
that,
plays
that he,
off.
That he takes plays. If he wasn't the intended target, he'd trot down the field. And, of course, the back cover goes, he's not getting the ball. So they simply slide off him and move into another coverage. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to sell that. You've got to sell it out that you're the intended receiver on every single play. But, you know, for the most part, Bill has picked winners off of the, I'm not going to say scrappy, but guys on the, over the crest of their career. Roman Pfeiffer, outstanding linebacker for the Rams.
Mike Vrabel.
Picks him up. Mike Vrabel, undersized defensive end, outstanding end linebacker, a la Teddy Bruschi, you know, a la Rob Ninkovich. Ninkovich, you know, cut from Miami, picks him up. He was a long snapper, turned into one of the outstanding defensive end outside linebackers in the NFL over the last 7 years. You know, and so Bill has a way of gauging the talent in terms of heart, in terms of intelligence.
I asked Coach Ingram what he thought Bill Belichick's greatest strength is, and that's exactly what Paul Ingram said. He said he has an uncanny ability to judge talent. And he gets these guys. What I like about it is, similar to Red Auerbach, and most of the people don't even know who Red Auerbach was, but Red Auerbach had that same ability to pick a seasoned, grizzled veteran who isn't performing at an all-star caliber pace with his team. But Auerbach knows that particular talent can fit into this system, and that's a missing piece. And somehow, Bill Belichick, I mean, the guy's not a god, but still, he's a football god. the fact that he gets these guys who come in here. And the other thing is, for God's sakes, Rutgers and unsigned free agents? Hello? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I watched the second half again the other day. I watched the second half, okay? I don't need to elaborate on that, do I? And the overtime. And I watched it again because I was feeling a little down for other reasons. And what a pick-me-up that was. But I forgot, much like a couple of years ago when who was the when they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, who was the back out of the backfield? Vereen, Shane Vereen. I watched James White again, and if it weren't for Tom Brady, there's your MVP. He scored 20 points in the Super Bowl.
I was surprised he wasn't.
20 points!
I was surprised he wasn't because he ran for one, he caught one, he scored the winning touchdown.
Got a two-pointer.
He had the two-point conversion. I mean, he did everything possible, you know, except take the snaps under center. You know, so
he did on one of those on a 2-point conversion. He did.
Yeah, he just took the direct snap. You're
right.
He did.
Yeah.
But you talk about Red Auerbach, Don Nelson,
Bailey Howell.
That was the other guy I was gonna mention.
Wayne Embry.
You know, Wayne Paul Silas.
Yeah.
You know, and Paul Silas in that era in the early in the mid 70s with Dave Cowens, I just love. I idolized Paul Silas because he was like 6'6", 6'7", not a big guy. But he could rebound with anybody, and that he was told that's your job. Okay, rebound.
Oh, he was trying.
And if you can
and
put
defense.
It back in, go right ahead.
Defense.
But your job is to give it to somebody who can score, and if they miss, go get it. And I mean, he was just amazing to watch. That somebody who understood his role and did it way beyond I think anybody's expectation. And that you know you'd heard his name around the league, and he came in and he just. Helped him to win that 76 championship.
I saw Hank Finkel the other day at Panera in was it Beverly? And it was at the North Shore Mall, and good to see Hank Finkel. He's another one of those guys who a role player, a Celtic all the way through. You know, it's so cool.
Yep.
But it's fun, and we got the first preseason game I think is on Thursday.
Thursday night, right? Jacksonville.
Are they scrimmaging? Is it they have Jacksonville in?
They have Jacksonville in this week to work out together, which is kind of weird. Belichick sort of arranged. I don't know if the league arranged that or Belichick arranged that, but usually the team that they're going to be playing, they'll practice with early in the week.
Three times they're doing it this year.
Yeah, so it's kind of whacked out. But I mean, you know, Bill has his reasons.
All right, let's turn our attention because we're going to be talking with Gary Larrabee in a little while at the bottom of the hour, but let's talk about the surge and fade of the Red Sox and Yankees, respectively. You know, it's an up and down season, but the Red Sox are hanging right between 9 and 12 games over 500. They're staying right there, so that looks like that's who they are. They've got some glaring weaknesses on the one hand, but on the other hand, despite this. We talked last week about the David Price, Dennis Eckersley thing. But despite that, they seem to have...
Best thing that could have happened to them.
Well, I think they have a sense of team. And they've got these additions that have come from nowhere, really. Nunez and the kid Devers. Mm-hmm. And they're contributing. And
they're hitting home runs. An understatement.
And they're hitting home runs.
Yeah, they've been so fortunate. You know, they're... Six-game win streak has coincided with the Yankees slide.
Yeah.
You know, since the All-Star game, Judge has 5 home runs, certainly way off the pace that he had.
Did you think, when you watched Home Run Derby, do you think, oh, man, this is not good for him? I did. I only watched Judge, and I thought when he was pumping those suckers out, I'm thinking, this is not good. I wouldn't want my ball player doing that.
You know, and we've seen it year after year. A guy goes down there, and he's got a select pitcher throwing lollipop pitches into a zone, and he's just all your weight shifts back, and you're just waiting to unleash, and it just destroys your timing. It destroys your rhythm. It destroys your batting eye, because your batting eye is now suddenly raised up because these guys are just lobbing these things in there, and you're jacking up. You're dropping that back shoulder, and you're looking to jack that thing up as high as you can. So when you're in your regular season mode, and you're striding with that front shoulder staying down longer, and then there's a natural dip. But when that front shoulder stays down, the hands stay level. Once you pop that shoulder, that front shoulder up, and you drop that back shoulder, now the elbow goes down. Now you have this big uppercut swing. So the plane you're swinging through is much smaller, mm-hmm. where your contact with the ball is. And maybe Judge is beginning to get back into that mode. He's probably spending a lot of time in the batting cages with the hitting coach, getting that front shoulder tucked down, getting those eyes back down into the strike zone. So now he's got that better swing and snap of the bat coming through the ball. But Sanchez, the catcher, was sat last night. So he's not producing as he was. And the Yankees, you know, they hit this slide, and the Red Sox suddenly, without David Price around, are suddenly issue-free.
And notice,
and they're playing
and Dustin Brodeur not around, which is more than coincidental.
But you've got Eduardo Nunez come in, who was probably one of the better players. He was probably one of the best players in the Giants at the time that the Red Sox dealt for him. But when you're 25 games out, you need younger talent, and so he's older. He's in his early 30s, and so okay, we'll take two young pitchers for this guy, and he has stepped in. And we thought he was going to go and play third base, but Devers is playing so well and hitting the ball so hard. And has he made errors? Yeah, but everybody, all major leaguers make errors. So I'm not going to hold that to him. But not many guys come up through single A, double A, triple A at the rate that he's done it, and go into the major leagues and continue to crush the ball.
Well, I've got two of them. Benintendi, although he's fallen back to the.
But he's starting to come out of it.
And how about having a guy like Chris Young on the bench?
Oh, at Nunez and Chris Young. I mean, you know, Young comes off the bench, smacks two yesterday. You know, it's great to have that kind of experience, and it's why the Red Sox picked him up when they did, because their outfield was so young, and you needed a veteran presence, someone who has had success and who could step in and give you quality in the field and quality at bats.
Time management. Mookie Betts sits down, Pedroia sits down, Bogart sits down, Vasquez and Leone Sandy Leone are splitting time. Benintendi sits down. Farrell takes a lot of heat from Boston radio. How do you think he's doing with time management? Because I've noticed that these guys, you know, when they get into a slump, it's not benching him. They need a rest. And they come back. They come back pretty energized.
Being an older traditionalist, I have a problem with a guy sitting out several games. Yeah, you've earned the starting job.
Let's look at their 15 and 16 inning games, coach.
They've had like five of them in the last 12 games in a row, you give the guys a break. You know, but they fly everywhere. So I mean, imagine being.
Have you done a cross country trip? By the way, doesn't make you tired.
They charter. These guys have more leg room than there is in a plane.
Well, I understand that, and I agree with you, but nevertheless. You go to a ballpark, let's say you got a 7 o'clock game, and let's say you're Dustin Pedroia, you get there at 3 p.m. Okay, I don't know what time these guys go to bed or what time they get up, but you're at the ballpark from 3 p.m. until closing. And these extra inning games, you know, whether you're playing or standing or sitting around, takes its toll every single night.
I don't have a problem with if there's an extra inning game, and if
a guy's hitting 200, these guys are in slumps. Betts is in a slump, and who's the other? JBJ goes in a slump. So Betts has played 95 straight games. So Farrell sits him down. I don't have a problem with that.
But I'm play three or four games, and all of a sudden you get to sit down.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about these guys getting some rest.
Bogarts has to sit down.
He can't play a full season
with guys.
Now Hanley Ramirez, that's a different story. I get you on that one.
All right, that's the thing that I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I mean they had one stretch where they had like 19 games in 20 days. Yeah, you give the guys a day off. You give them a breather. Plus, you want to keep the other guys sharp.
You want to get Young at bats. Young's got to get some at bats.
Yeah, they do. And you know, if there's a situation where maybe a guy hasn't hit somebody, you know, you I think the righty lefty thing is overblown.
Of course,
is baseball. But you know, okay, you haven't hit it well against me, so you're going to sit this game out, and we're going to put another guy in.
Metrics.
And I thought, well, metrics.
All right, let's call Gary. We'll be right back.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we are back, and time to listen to someone else beside us, two blowhards here, with Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. Hey, Gary.
Hey, guys. How are we tonight?
We are well.
Well, as you know, a lot going on, Gary. I noticed in the paper today I was otherwise occupied over the weekend, but a lot of golf taking place nationally over the weekend. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, I think we got to think about what's going to be happening this week at Quail Hollow down in Charlotte, North Carolina, with the PGA Championship, and wondering who will win the next and the last of the four majors. And of course, we're all anticipating. We'd love to see a Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, kind of a showdown the last day. But we'll see how that shakes up. How do you see this event, Tim?
Well, I'm not sure Ricky Fowler is going to be there on the last day. Royal McIlroy depends whether Jekyll or Hyde shows up. Jordan Spieth is riding a wave of momentum, certainly, and is trying to play his way into the history books to be the youngest to win the four majors, the Grand Slam. I think the odd makers are going to put Spieth right at the top of the list. And if he is back in the groove and can put his mind past the pressure of trying to get that fourth one and just play the golf that he's been playing the last several weeks, I think he's definitely your guy to beat. But you know, this has been the last few years of the first time winner on a lot of these major events, Gary. And you know, there's always that possibility of someone sneaking in as a first-timer, and I think that's going to be the biggest threat to Jordan Spieth.
I think that one name neither one of us has mentioned, but I think we have to mention him now, is the gentleman from Japan, Hideki Matsuyama, who just won yesterday at the Firestone. They've been talking about him being an eventual major champion winner, and he obviously comes to Quail Hollow in fine form this week, and he'll have to be considered in the mix. They've been talking about him for two or three years, and he's another name that you have to involve.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question about that, Gary. You know, historically and throughout a summer or throughout the summer golf season, and I don't really know if this is a fair question to ask, but how often, no matter what the tournament is, how often do guys win week to week? You know, whatever tournament you're in, and then you come back and play a major or whatever. How often does that happen? You know, maybe just a guess.
It's rare. You know, Tiger used to do it a lot, and you know, Jackie, all the big names used to do it on occasion. But it's a tough thing to do, and especially the fact that no player from Japan has ever won one of the four majors. It would certainly be an event for the history books if it should happen. But don't be surprised, guys, if he's right there in the mix. But, of course, we'd love to see Spieth win. That would give him the career Grand Slam. He'd be the youngest player, I believe, to win the career Grand Slam if he should win this weekend by just a little bit ahead of Jack. But it's a crapshoot, guys. You can put a list of, you know, 5-10 names in there, and quite possibly none of those guys. Look, who picked Jimmy Walker to win last year, and where has Jimmy Walker been since last year?
No.
He won it last year, so who knows?
Well, I think that's one of the truly interesting things about being a golf observer over the last couple of years, since Tiger has sort of faded into background, Gary, is that we've seen several individuals shoot to the top of the money list and the wins, and yet not be able to maintain it in the fashion in which Tiger did, or Jack, or Tom, with that level of consistency in their performances that we've kind of expected. What we're expecting, and we just got through talking about, was that somebody new every week steps up and wins the tournament.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. And I'll contradict myself right now by saying don't be swayed by how these guys played last weekend. They played a terrific golf course, but they shot lights out, low numbers. Someone shot 61 out there yesterday.
Yes, I saw that.
It's Firestone. Firestone used to be called the monster of a golf course with Oakland Hills in Michigan. And, I mean, we've talked about over and over, the equipment and the talent of the players is beating up on almost all these golf courses. Quail Hollow is a new course, first time a major championship has been held there, and it's been an excellent course. The players love it. It's been a regular part of the tour for a few years now, and they now have their first major, and we'll see if the heat's a factor. We'll see how the PGA typically gives the players a chance to shoot some low scores. But it's a crapshoot from one week to the next, and don't be swayed. McIlroy finished the top 10 yesterday. Spieth did not. Adam Scott did not. I think we all think McIlroy is due. If this kid still gets the promise we think he has, despite his screwed up relationship with that great tennis pro Caroline Wozniacki, you know, he dropped her and his game dropped at the same time, and now he's back with another young lady who they're engaged. I don't know if they're married or not, Tim. Are they? Is McIlroy still got a girl? They're not married yet, are they? Maybe they did get married.
They did marry. Yes. Yeah,
they got married some castle someplace. Anyways, you just don't know what's going to happen. And
do guys like, you know, Spieth wasn't a real factor last week. Does that point to some of your really bigger names? We'll use that week before. I think Tiger used them as a warm up that he wanted to win it, so he would be in that mindset to just keep winning the next week when the major came along. Do some guys take it as an opportunity to work on their game and work out some kinks and try some new things, and where they generally finish isn't as important as preparing for that major, that bigger game, that bigger tournament the next week?
I'm not sure. It's a good question. I just think we have to keep repeating that every week is a different world on the PGA Tour, no matter where they're playing, no matter what the field, no matter what the weather conditions. But right now, you certainly have to think that one of the big boys should be in a position to win this tournament. But we've been surprised more often than not. Who would have believed that Keegan Bradley, who played his high school golf at Hopkins, Massachusetts, who expected he would win the PGA a few years ago in that wonderful duel with Duffner, and he hasn't done much since. But what are the odds it'll be a newcomer? What are the odds it'll be an old favorite that we expect to be in the hunt? That's why there's a lot of money being thrown around in Las Vegas for these majors in particular, and why you're going to be cautious how you spend that money.
That's why I save it for my local beer distributor. I'd rather bet on a good beer than a bad golf outcome. Gary,
I'm sorry, Tim. We should note before we go too much further, one of our local players is out there on the web.com tour, Rob Oppenheim, mm-hmm. Salem-born, Andover-bred, He's played 5 weeks in a row. He's going to play a sixth week in a row this week. He did drop from 25th to 27th on the web.com money list. You got to finish in the top 25 to get your card to play in the Pro Tour. They've got seven tournaments left. He's playing again this week in Springfield, Missouri. He's only $4,000 behind that 25th spot. So it looks like he's going to have another scenario like in past years where he's always battled right down to the wire to make that magic top 25. I just want to mention that before we move on, because he's sure pulling for Rob. Even though he's 38 years old, he's had 2 years on the tour off and on over the last 5 years. He's not making it easy for himself again this year.
All right, Gary, what about bringing it closer to home? Anything to look at?
Well, none of our girls excelled last week at the State Women's Amateur. That was last week, and none of our gals did anything particularly noteworthy there. I think we're next looking forward to is the New England PGA Championship, which is just a couple of weeks away. The 21st or the 23rd, they'll be playing both at Trinity Hill in Ipswich and the Renaissance Club in Haverhill, which will give a chance for all of our listeners, both all throughout the North Shore and the Merrimack Valley, to watch some terrific golf free of charge on those 3 days, Trinity Hill and the Renaissance, the first 2 days, and I believe they're playing the final round as well at Turner Hill and Ipswich on the 23rd.
All right, sounds good. What do you got planned for the Salem News on Friday?
I'm not sure yet, but we talked last week initially about Charlie May, the college player from Topsfield, Masconomet. I just finished up at Elon College. He's going back for his master's. He's got one more year of eligibility. He had a great four-week stretch around here, almost making it to the U.S. Amateur for the second year. I just missed it. Played well at the WeMet, played well. I was the Mass Amateur. He was just up for a short time. But this week, we're either going to be talking about a very prominent golf photographer. This week, we'll be writing about a golf photographer from the North Shore, or we may be talking about one of the prominent women teachers, an LPGA professional, PGA teaching professional, who's in our midst, who's had quite a career as a teacher. You see her on the Golf Channel once in a while, and we may write about her. I'm not sure. One will be showing up this week. One will be showing up next week.
Oh, that sounds cool.
We'll leave all of our listeners in suspense until the end of the week.
There we go. And either one of them, I can't wait to look at. That sounds great. All right, Gary, we'll talk. We'll talk to you next week, I hope.
And let's have a fun weekend, guys, with the PGA Championship.
Sounds good. Thank you, Gary. Take care.
Thanks, Gary.
Guys. Be well. Thank you.
Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. Yeah, we're going to have a fun week, fun weekend. I got a boys' weekend this weekend with my son. My wife and daughter, they're going down somewhere with the grandchildren and her daughter, and they're going for a weekend. So my son and I are going to have a boys' weekend, and I got the popcorn, the pizza, the ball games lined up. We are all set. We're going to be styling, so it's going to be a good weekend.
I love asking Gary questions, about the other side of golf, just not the playing, mm-hmm. but the psychology of the golf and getting his interpretation and his thoughts on those questions. It's a tester every week to come up
well,
with something for him.
Yeah, but and the thing about interviewing that I've learned, and by no means am I an expert. I've been doing it for a long time. Bill taught me so much. But the thing about interviewing, A, is that everybody has a story to tell. Hmm. B, if you're going to interview someone who you don't know, you do have to do some research. But C, and the hardest part to me, is listening. And so that I want to hear what the person has to say instead of concentrating on what my next question is. Because many times I'll play something back and I realize, oh crap, he said that and I didn't follow up. I was too busy thinking of a question of the next question to get out when my interviewee had said something really pertinent that I should have listened to and followed up on, and I didn't. So asking the right question. I mean, how many times have you seen that on television, not just in sports, but across the board? You're sitting there saying, ask this. Yeah. But then you see someone like Charlie Rose or Ted Koppel and guys like that, and geez, they do ask the question. They listen, but then they ask the question that that you want asked.
I think they have an outline, a basic set of questions that they would like to ask. And then based upon the response that they get, they let the response drive the next question. You know, and that's what I've always tried to do in the interviews that I've done here is ask an open-ended question, and then from their response, mm-hmm. pick out points that I think are of value and I want to explore further. You know, and I've never come down with a set list of questions for anybody, and it's just totally wing it off the top of my head, and you know, I like to think that they've come out pretty good.
I like to follow. Well, they have, and of course we also have we have brilliant people that we talk to. They make it easy for us.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Gary is just so well versed in the game of golf and in the history of golf that the background and the play of the golf, the style of the play, what drives an individual, what affects an individual before the tournament, during the tournament, you know, how do they come out, how do they react, and his being around the game so long and seeing so much, it to me it just opens up doors of for analysis, and it just expands for our listeners that you know, responses that Gary tends to give. Now you go and you watch the match, and now suddenly you may be looking for some of those aspects that he's hit upon that have an interplay into the game itself, just not the physics of hitting the ball and walking after it. It's what goes into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come back with Nick Kukru of the Gloucester Times.
Come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back, and all right, let's see if that's Nick. Go ahead and answer. If it's, go ahead.
Hello.
Hey, sorry, I didn't have my ring on for some reason, but
all right, we'll talk to you.
Yeah,
now.
We'll forgive you. We'll forgive you. All right, Nick Kukru is on the line from the Gloucester Daily Times. He's a sports editor, and Nick, I know you are all over the place right now. And let's start with baseball. You're covering the Intertown League.
Yes, just at the Manchester Mariners against Hamilton Generals, game two, and Mariners picked up a 5-0 win and clinched a 6th straight berth in the final.
So wow.
They're back where they always are.
I was going to say, gee, how surprising. Who pitched tonight for them?
This is one of the certainties in life, I guess. You know, another dominant performance. Mark Finney, who, you know, had an outstanding senior for Gloucester High, pitched a complete game shutout, 2 hits, and he faced the minimum batters. He picked off one guy that got a hit, then they got a double play, and had the last 17 guys he faced. So it was
wow.
It was a dominant performance. Only one strikeout, but there were really no hard hit balls.
Good. You know, and that's playing in this league, in this level against older guys, is going to be such a confidence builder when he goes off to school.
Yeah, absolutely, because that league, a lot of times, I feel like generally speaking, you know, the Mariners are an exception, the offense is usually ahead of the pitching. So you get some out-of-control games sometimes with it, knocking the ball all over the place. But you know, the Generals are a pretty solid team, and he just kept them at bay. He just, you know, really working both sides of the plate. A lot of, you know, weakly hit ground balls was kind of his MO tonight.
Who's the offensive leaders for Manchester?
Well, yeah, Mike Cain, who nobody really wants to pitch to anymore. He was 2-for-2 with two intentional walks and two runs and an RBI. And Adam Philpott had a couple RBI hits. And Noah Aiello had a big pinch hit, two RBI single that made it 4-0, 2-0 to 4-0 in the fourth inning. So that was kind of the big hit that kind of put it away.
So what's up next now in the playoffs? How's that work?
They'll be in the finals. They start on Saturday in Essex, no matter who wins the other series between Rockport and Rowley. And then it goes Sunday, and then Wednesday, and then Saturday and Sunday if necessary. So they'll they're used to this spot right now. They have the horses, they have the pitching staff to kind of, you know, play a deep series like that. They're perfectly built for this time of year. And it looks like tonight the Rowley Rams beat the Rockport Counties 1-0, so they're one game away from another finals rematch.
Wow. Well, it's the usual, typical fun league for these guys. Anything else about the ITL you want to mention, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just attend to it. I think this would be if the Rams can beat Rockport tomorrow, I think that might be 5 or 6 straight ITL finals between the Rams and the Mariners.
Should they have the finals at the beginning of the year, Nick, and then let's play the regular season?
Break them up.
What was that? Sorry.
Should they just have the finals to start the season and then just play the rest of the games?
Yeah, I know. That's the way it's been lately. It's unbelievable. I know Rockport's right there. They just haven't been able to get over that hump of Rowley. I mean, they still have, you know, Rowley still has to win one more game. They're back at it at Evans tomorrow night. But, I mean, they're creeping up. They're creeping up closer and closer each year, but they're not over the hump of Rowley just yet. And Rowley, I mean, they've been kind of you know, down on their luck sometimes. They always give the Mariners a battle, but the Mariners just always seem to squeak one out. I think it was 3 or 4 years ago now. Rowley took the first 2 games of the best of 5, only to see the Mariners ran off 3 straight to win it. So they're a tough team to put away.
What's the makeup of Manchester? And, you know, you mentioned Gloucester players, and I'm sure Manchester players. Where else do they draw from?
Yeah, it's Manchester, Essex, and Gloucester. It's a pretty good mix, actually, on that team. You know, you got Philpott, Kane, Colin Rogers, Mark Finney, Gloucester guys. But there are some Manchester and Essex guys. Ian Buckley, Manchester guy, is a, you know, big time, one of their key veteran players. Alex Ray, a Manchester kid, he's table setter at the top of the order. So I mean, they're pretty well mixed across the board.
Okay, and what about Rockport? Is it strictly Rockport guys?
And there are some Gloucester guys on that too. So I think it goes, because there's no Gloucester. Gloucester's out of town.
Right.
It's the intertown league. It depends on where you live.
Okay.
So they have, you know, the guys who live closer to Rockport will play for the Townies. I believe Dylan Mackey is on the Townies. But I think the Townies actually have a higher representation of Rockport guys on their team. Mm-hmm. You know, Connor Douglas, Keith Siegel. I know Gloucester's Sean Hull is one of their big pitchers. So it's a pretty good mix on both of the teams.
I think it's amazing how small towns like Rockport and Manchester, but Rockport especially, just keep pumping out these athletes, particularly in baseball. I'm just blown away by that.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, it's, I mean, as we saw this year, Rockport's got to be the smallest high school in the area, and they get into the sectional semifinals after playing, you know, a bunch of Division II and III teams in the regular season.
Yeah.
So it's always nice to see. Boys soccer is another one, but they both just seem to pump out these unbelievable athletes. It's incredible.
Yeah, now, Nick, what can you tell me, if anything? I know, again, that you're spread out and you're spread thin, but the international Dory races, can you give me a thumbnail on what's going on with them?
Yes, I actually haven't got the report yet on who won the final tonight. The men's final was at 6:30 tonight. It was Mark and Nick Gigoloni, who were the June champs in Gloucester, against Wally Mears and Brian Dury. So the Gigolonis had a far better time on Sunday morning. They were actually really impressive. I thought, you know, they had a lot to prove, because they didn't race against Dylan and Clayton Morrissey in June, but they beat them by 11 seconds on Sunday, and we know how good those
are. Yeah, that's amazing,
That was a really impressive performance by the two younger Gigoloni brothers. And I believe they won that race by 11 seconds. That was a really impressive win. And then we had four crews actually earn a berth in, you know, a trip to Canada. I believe on August 25th, they'll go to Lunenburg for the second leg. There was Ashley Smith and Rachel Cecilio for the women, John Francis and Alex Pizzamenti and mixed doubles, and they're going for four straight mixed doubles titles. So
wow.
They've been pretty dominant there. And then we had Steve Goodick and Tony Frontiero coming back from retirement in the Masters Over 50 division, and they looked really good as well. And there was an unopposed junior race, and I don't think that junior crew has actually gone to Canada. One of Christian Sanfilippo, I think he's going to be going away to college.
Right.
So they're not going to build a junior crew in Canada.
Yeah. He was probably just doing it just to stay in some kind of cardio shape or something or other. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, how does that work, Nick? All these people, when they go up north, does this out-of-pocket money? Is there a sponsor? How does that work for these people?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I know they have a bunch of fundraisers, the International Dory Racing Committee. And they raise a bunch of money to kind of, you know, put these two trips together. I mean, it's a great event. I think this is the 66th year.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a great draw. I think, you know, I love it in June when it's at the State Fish Pier because you can, you know, follow along the entire race
right. Through
the pier, and you can, you know, you got a front row seat for usually great races the whole way down. I've heard the Lunenburg setup is pretty similar where it's at the Inner Harbor, and they can, you know, there's not usually rough water in there, and it's usually, a pretty good battle.
Well, we'll have to call Karen Andreas and see if she'll buy you a plane ticket up there, first class, right? All right. Hey, Nick, I appreciate it, and try to get some rest when you can.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times sports editor, and, man, just all over the place and covering all kinds of stuff. And, man, well, we kind of put the boot to that hour.
Yeah. I just checked my watch. He's 2 minutes to go.
I know. All right, so what's in the attic? What's left?
Just really looking forward to football season. I don't think there's many football fans in the area that are not getting jacked as the days get closer, and you know, just wanting everybody to stay healthy in training camp so they go into the season with all cylinders firing, and you know, crazy talk about 19-0. But I think everybody has it in the back of their mind every season. You know, can we not lose a game? Very, very hard to do over the course of the year with all the nicks and dings. But they've positioned themselves very well. They've got a great backup quarterback, and it's the reason why he's still here. And he's a very good young talent. He's getting older. Belichick has looked to strengthen his depth chart. And he's got a lot of very difficult decisions. But as usual, as he begins to let people go, these guys are going to get picked up by other teams because, you know, these other coaches and GMs look at what Belichick has done and goes, okay, well, there's got to be something in this guy that maybe we can use. And so these guys don't find themselves unemployed for all that many weeks once they leave the Patriots camp. And for the Patriots, it's simply a case of numbers. At various positions, they can only keep so many, and he'll put as many guys as he can on the practice squad in those key positions that he thinks he may need them throughout the course of the year. And there was talk on one of the sports stations last week about expanding the number of players on the practice squad.
And it's curious, they don't do any cuts until the final cutdown this time around. There's no cuts down to 75, and then the 53. It all goes down to 53, like in the fourth week.
Oh,
these guys stick around for the whole camp.
Well, that's only, you know, that's a valuable thing for the coach. It gives them a longer time to fully evaluate some guy. That, you know, some guy may slip after you've made your first set of cuts. And so why not keep everybody? It gives you full house. It gives you more guys to work. Yeah, it gives you more guys that you have to evaluate. But also it gives you a better opportunity to evaluate all of those guys on an equal footing.
Well, I'm with you. I don't ordinarily read all the preseason stuff, but I gobble it up every day now.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to learn some of these names.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, if there's one thing that I've loved, when I was down in D.C., the Washington, the Sunday Washington Post was great because of all the sports writers who wrote the columns on the various sports, and because I got used to reading that in the Globe when I was back home, and the Post and the Globe are our sister newspapers, and I came back home, and I just loved grabbing the Sunday Globe and reading Nick Cafiato on baseball and all the other writers on Kevin Paul DuPont on hockey, and just a whole page of hockey and basketball and baseball and football notes, you know, and it's like everything you need to know is on one page about the entire professional sport.
All right, we'll have our football schedule posted very soon. That's it for tonight. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. For Tim Kearns, for the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell, and for our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.